If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Yo, we are back, and we are not live from Pantheon.
We are live.
Which is good.
Is good, yes.
Very
but
good.
But not from Pantheon.
That's true. So, gosh, it doesn't feel like a week has gone by since the last time we sat and chatted, but in a whole different environment.
Right. Yeah. Does it feel like a million years or like 10 minutes?
10 minutes, actually.
Oh, okay, see, it's a million years for me.
Oh, okay, fine. I'm doing the 10-minute because I'm trying to get through the week quick. So do I ask the question, how was your week?
It's been a weird week. PantheaCon was great, and it was amazing, and I just posted a blog about this, actually. I took some time outs for myself this weekend, which I don't often do because I get FOMO, fear of missing out, right?
Yep.
So normally I will push myself. I'm an introvert. I need time away to just recalibrate and come back.
Right.
And I don't often do that at PantheaCon or big events like this because I want to see all the people and do all the things.
Right.
And it happens once a year. And some of the people who go, I only see once a year. But there were many moments throughout the weekend where I was in the hotel room by myself watching Gilmore Girls laying in bed. And it was restorative and wonderful. And then my partner ended up having an allergic reaction to something and breaking out in hives. And he was supposed to present on Monday morning, and we ended up leaving and driving straight home to the doctor.
Oh, my.
To the emergency room. And he's fine, and the allergic reaction it's run its course, and we still are not sure what caused it, but drastically changed the end of my experience.
Right.
And then the rest of the week, I've been in a time warp. In fact, I had a reading. I had a client call me for their reading, and I didn't answer the phone because I was like, girl, your reading's tomorrow. And then I got a message from her that was like, hey, I missed my appointment. What's going on? And I thought, your appointment's tomorrow. No, her appointment was today. In my head, it was Wednesday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So it's been, like, I was convinced it was Wednesday. So that's my timing is off.
Well,
I'm in altered space still. So it's been a weird, weird week.
Right.
How about you?
Well, after being at PantheaCon only one day and not fully experiencing everything about PantheaCon, it made me realize that next year is a must-do for at least three of the 4 days.
Yay.
And that'll be fun. And I connected back with some things that were from my past, things that it was almost like being able to do this circle and yet still come, you know, a step up, but be with, you know, situations and some places and things that were just like, wow, this is really great. And then coming back in the middle of a humongous rainstorm, which, you know, thank goodness for our tech person, Alan the Cauldron. He was driving, and I was like, yay, thank you, because
it was intense.
It was intense, but we all made it back fine, you know, and all. But and then, you know, the following couple of days were good, you know, for me, because I worked at Milk and Honey doing readings. And then I kind of got a heavy dose of stuff when I wound up working at Lucky Mojo. I had a lot of clients, and they were just a lot of people with a lot of intense stuff. And by the time I got to Wednesday, when I go to my friend's house after work and we're supposed to go to yoga, I just looked at her and I go, I can't.
Yeah.
So I just kind of fell into a kind of a slump,
yeah,
and laid there on their couch or their recliner and kind of rested. But the rest of the week has been good.
Yeah.
And I've been able to sort of realize that, like you, I need time to myself.
Yeah.
I need to make that more apparent. And when I do, even if it's, you know, as you say, watching Gilmore Girls or doing something, it's important.
Yeah, a little decompression time.
Yeah.
It works wonders.
And I think that both of us work in such, you know, fast-paced situations, whatever we do,
mm-hmm.
it's important. And it's interesting, I have always been an extrovert,
yeah.
always been out there. And you were talking about, you know, fear of missing out, and I'm thinking, I always was like that, and now I have a tendency to just kind of, well, that's really nice, that's cool, I don't know, maybe I'll go here, maybe I'll go there. I mean, I sat and had a cup of coffee while Alan was in the vendor room, and I was waiting for you, and I'm going, this is pretty cool. I'm just having a cup of coffee.
Just chilling. Yeah.
So, and I do that a lot when I go to Arkansas to visit my daughter. I literally get up, I walk out, I drive to some restaurant or some place, and I sit there and I read or I write. Or
yeah.
I don't do it here.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, you know, why don't I love my home, but I'm always here and I'm always aware of the things that are projects that are important to do or need to get done.
Yeah, of course.
When you move out, you do that. So that was a realization for this week.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
That was that. And now we have a goddess.
Yay, a goddess.
And
they're the best.
Yep. And this is a sun goddess. This is, you know, even in the middle of our moisture that we've been having, it kind of made me feel really nice to work on her.
Yeah, sun goddess. And it's a rare thing to have a goddess connected to the sun.
Yes.
And a god connected to the moon.
Uh-huh.
Most traditions, that's reversed, where the moon is feminine and the sun is masculine.
Uh-huh.
The Norse have it reversed, too.
Uh-huh.
And then the Shinto tradition,
uh-huh.
which is who we're talking about today with Amaterasu.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know that I heard a little, you know, in doing research, is this blurb, and it was talking about, yes, we do have, you know, the masculine solar energy and the lunar feminine energy, but in ancient times, there really was a solar, and they can barely see the thread of it in all their cultures. Obviously, Amaterasu is right out center front, there you are, and it's very apparent. And kept apparent in some of the things that we will be talking about, her shrines and things like this. So, the inculcation of the patriarch moving in and changing it, and now we have only one side.
Right.
So, yay for Amaterasu keeping things going.
Yeah. And the other thing I think is really exciting about talking about her. Right now, is that she is beautiful. And remembering all of the beautiful things. It's kind of been my charge for the last 6 months. You know, there's so much heavy and scary and ugly and depressing. But it's so easy to get caught up in that and feel weighed down by it.
Right.
But there is actually just as much, if not more,
mm-hmm.
beauty and joy and love and all of the things we want to pull in and feel. And she is a beautiful reminder.
Yes.
To celebrate that, the beauty and the things that are beautiful, because they're everywhere.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's the focus, and I think that's another part of what I enjoy about doing our show, is that when we start to research, we start to look, we focus on what we're doing, and then we suddenly see things a little differently, or we get a new piece of information, or something that brightens us up as to what we're doing. And then we can share it and say, well, yeah, so there's all this out there, but look at this great thing, and be really excited about it. So now we have a poem.
Yes. This comes from the Goddess Oracle, which is a deck, an oracle deck, by Amy Sophia Marishinsky. Sorry. Yep, there you go. And this is an oracle deck that I adore.
Yes.
I read for myself out of this deck every month. Amaterasu Omi Kami. Let me share with you the secret of the mirror. Let me share what is known only to the sun goddess. It is a secret so powerful, it will free you from darkness. A secret so delightful, let its warmth dance in your heart. A secret so illuminating, it allows you to know yourself. A secret so simple, all you need to do is open your eyes. The secret is, in the light of the sun, in the eyes of the mirror, you are beauty.
That's just, it chilled.
Yeah.
A little chill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, an interesting, prior to Pantheacon, our show was on the mirror.
Right.
So this is a nice segue for a goddess that is very attached to that particular sacred object.
Right, which is also interesting. A sacred object that many goddesses are connected to. And I'm sure we touched on that. I've forgotten everything we said, of course, because that was weeks ago. But we just, last night at Milk and Honey, we had our monthly goddess gathering, and we worked with Oshun.
Ah!
And Lou Flores actually came down and was our guest priest.
Nice.
But Oshun also uses the mirror as her magical object.
Ah!
To see the heavens.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Magical mirrors.
I love it. I love it. So, interesting enough, one of the things that I did notice, of course, you know, the meaning of her name.
Yeah.
And, of course, there are many versions of it based upon who translates what.
Yes.
But one of them is the great deity illuminating heaven.
Mm.
And when you use Kami at the end, K-A-M-I, it represents spirit. So she is the great illuminator, but of the spirit.
Right, right. So the Shinto comes from Japan. Let's, you know, get super elementary for a second.
There we
right?
go.
Shinto comes from Japan. So the word Kami, it in English we go, oh, it's God. It's like the title for God, but it's so much more than that. What was this? The exact thing that you just said?
Of the spirit.
Of the spirit, right? So it's divinity, it's the way of the gods, it's connected to the divine. So
right.
It's not just, oh, that's God. Like, there, it's
so much more.
More romantic.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things, if you start to read about, and of course doing the myth, which we will go through, is that the names of the different deities that are in this myth have a long name, and it has more to say than just,
right.
Hi, I'm the sun, or I'm the moon. Yeah. It's about this beautiful way of saying that same thing. And I find that absolutely delightful to be able to be that poetic and that romantic about what it is, even if they're storm gods or crappy gods or goddesses. They're very... It's very fluid about what they are. They say, I'm this really, you know, with all of this and that, instead of Zeus or Apollo or
Aphrodite. Well, and this is a culture, you know, again, we're talking about a deity whose worship has never gone underground.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So this is a living tradition. There may have been some shifts and change and it's gone in and out of vogue a few times.
Right.
But we're talking about a piece of Japanese culture that's never gone away. So that's,
right.
You know, this, I always like to give a little extra warning when it comes to working with deity that
mm-hmm.
are from a living lineage, because
right.
when you call, they come, and they come real fast.
Exactly.
And especially for those of us who live in areas where there is a large community of Japanese folks, right?
Exactly.
The San Francisco Bay Area has a huge community of Japanese folks. So this goddess is here.
Very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you feel drawn by her, if you feel connected, if there is something about her that's alluring, I highly encourage you to read about Shintoism, to learn about the culture she comes from. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the language of how their deities are named
right.
is so different than what we're used to in the Western culture.
Right.
You know, so,
right.
yeah, it's beautiful, and it's so different than what we know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so let us talk and discuss the myth. Let us see what it represents for Amaterasu.
So Amaterasu has many siblings. One of her siblings is Suzanawa. And Suzanawa is the storm god. And he is very jealous of her.
Mm-hmm.
Very jealous of her. And one day he throws a fit. And Amaterasu is not only the sun, but she is the rice fields.
Right.
Her power, her energy is what allows the rice fields to grow and to flourish. So in a rampage, her brother, Suzanawa, vandalizes the rice fields.
Uh-huh.
And then he went and took her sacred animal, which is a horse, and flayed it and left it in the rice fields. And then he took a loom, which is one of her sacred objects because she is connected to fabric and sewing and weaving.
Mm-hmm.
And he destroys the loom.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if all of that wasn't bad enough, her jerk of a brother goes and kills her handmaid, her most beloved.
Mm-hmm.
She is broken.
Mm-hmm.
She's so sad. She's
mm-hmm.
so depressed. She, of course, feels betrayed by her brother, and instead of fighting back, instead of going after him, she retreats into a cave, and she refuses to come out. She refuses to return to the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
She refuses to feed the rice fields with her energy. And what begins to happen, and this may sound familiar for mm-hmm. those of you who know other myths from other regions, the rice fields start to die. Things
mm-hmm.
stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
People start to get ill. We have an endless night. And things are falling apart. And the other gods and the goddesses, they're like, uh-oh, we need to get her out of this cave. We're in trouble and humanity is suffering.
Right.
And they try everything. They bring her beautiful jewels. They bring her delicious foods and silks. They sing songs to her and try to lure her out. And they do all of the things. And
uh-huh.
nothing works. Nothing works. Nothing works. They beg her and say, the people are dying. They need your light. The rice fields aren't growing. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And finally, the goddess Uzume, who we will also talk about in a moment, the goddess Uzume has a brilliant idea. And Uzume is a lusty goddess. And she is large and round and beautiful. And she brings a huge bronze mirror out and rolls it right outside the entrance of a cave. And then she takes a wash tub and turns it upside down and stands on it like it's a stage. And she begins to dance and swing her hips and play with her breasts. And she lifts up her dress and reveals herself.
Uh-huh.
And she begins to strip naked and dance around and play with her vulva and show all the other gods this body sexy dance.
Uh-huh.
And the other gods begin to hoop and holler and cheer and laugh and start partaking in this beautiful energy. And all of a sudden, Amaterasu hears what is happening. She hears the noise and the hooping and hollering and the laughter, and she is so curious. And meanwhile, Uzume outside is enacting sacred dance. She's doing this very sacred ritual that is still a part of the Shinto tradition. And so finally, Amaterasu is so curious, so wondering what is going on, that she pokes her head out, pushes the boulder back from the cave just a tiny bit, and is The brilliance of her beauty is reflected in the bronze mirror, and she is overcome by the beauty reflecting in the bronze mirror, that it actually draws her out of the cave.
Right.
And while she is distracted by her brilliance, the brilliance of the sun shining, the other gods go and close the cave real fast so she can't go back in there, and they call her out to dance with them, and she agrees, and the light returns to the earth.
Ah. There we are. Hooray!
Hooray!
We have fun.
We talk about Amaterasu as this powerful goddess because obviously she's the sun. But if it wasn't for Uzume, all life would have ended.
Right.
Yes. So
and
really, it's, tonight we're talking about Amaterasu
and Uzume.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, as you have pointed out in the myth, it was through the lustiness of the energies that this energy was drawn back out.
Yeah.
So even with the sun, even with the whatever life force we see it in, and obviously, as Phoenix has said, there are other myths that have this, there is the drawing out through that lustiness.
Right.
And so my thought here is that with that life force energy and the lust of life, is when you come back out from your cave.
Right. Right. And there's a moment, too, thinking of the grief that Amaterasu is experiencing. There is a moment when you are in grief where you have to retreat.
Right.
There is. When you go through grief for whatever it is, whether it's your brother being a jerk and destroying your rice fields, or the death of a loved one, or the loss of a job, or whatever, there is a moment where you need to just pull back.
Right.
But remembering the brilliance and the beauty, and letting that bring you back into the land of the living.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously, many versions have different parts of the myth that are changed, you know, and how it's this is done and that is done. Part of it was there was the concept that the moon god could create. So he said, if I am really telling the truth, I will create out of your jewels three suns. And he broke them open and did so, and he got so involved with his aspect of creating that he went on a rampage. And that was part of the destruction and the destructiveness, and then she retreated. So it was the process of, which again makes me wonder that, you know, when you think that a male creating life and the beauty of life and suddenly circumventing a natural process for whatever reason, and then suddenly have that power go to your head and more than, you know, normal, and you lose perspective and destroy things.
Right.
And I think, you know, we can liken that unto many things in our present world. But the point being is that it is an age-old theme that is over.
Yes, and if you look at Kali, the Hindu goddess, Sekhmet, the Egyptian goddess, these are two other deities who get so absorbed in the fury either of dance or destruction that they literally lose themselves into it and have to almost be tricked into returning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we have a theme, whether it's laid out by women or men, that is brought about by that, then the trickery, but the lusty point of reference brings people back in.
Right.
And they also have different versions. Instead of shutting the cave door, there's a strong god that takes a huge, you know, straw rope and ties it way open and keeps it so that it's forever tied open and can never shut. I mean, so there are different versions.
Right. Well, again, we're talking about these stories that would have been, you know, village by village have their own versions and tales. And so now we're trying to take an entire country of Japan making it into one story, and that doesn't happen that way.
No, it doesn't. So
as much as we try and make it like that.
True. I mean, obviously it can work, but we do know that the process here is of the seasons, and whether we have three or four, and the change of the abundance to the growing and the harvesting and the death and the loss of light and things. We have myth that is brought forward, but this one in its true entirety is about the sun and its changing,
right,
which actually stays more in keeping with what happens
with the actual seasons.
Right.
Rather than just some goddess decides she's upset because something happened and she, you know, creative goddess of harvest and goes off. So I was much more impressed with how the version and what they're talking about.
Right.
So, and
it's also another alternative. It's Susanawa, mm-hmm. the brother. In some versions I've seen, Susanu,
mm-hmm.
the sister.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a rivalry and a jealousy there. So
I, very much like Inanna and Irishkigal.
Right.
In terms of the Sumerian.
Yeah.
And the handmaiden sometimes is the handmaiden, and she's sometimes the sister.
Right.
You know, so you've got versions of how they decide it's going to be said. But
although I do like the birth story of these gods.
Mm-hmm.
There is a, you know, like in many traditions, there's an overarching god,
mm-hmm.
right? A
right.
creator god.
Right.
That is Izanagi or Izanami,
mm-hmm.
or many other names depending on the region.
Right.
And I so apologize if I am making any of these, if I'm mispronouncing things, because I probably am. But in the origin story, there's Amaterasu and this Susanu or Susanawa, depending on the story you read, and then there's another sibling. But the great god washes out one of his eyes,
mm-hmm.
and that's how Amaterasu is born. And then he washes his other eye, and the sibling is born. And then he washes out his nose, and that's how another sibling.
There you go. And she came from his left eye.
Yes.
Amaterasu came from his left eye.
Right.
Which, again, in more ways than one, is usually talked about as the feminine side.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Right. And that is true in, like, Chinese medicine,
mm-hmm.
not Japanese, but there's a lot of crossover.
Yes, there is crossover.
The feminine side of the body is the left side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of have that. And then he also gave her the jewel, which became the necklace, which we will talk more about the sacred objects or symbols for her after the break. But it was interesting about, and the version I like that kind of ended with the brother. She pulled out his toenails, and pulled out his, you know, his toes and fingernails, and threw him into, you know, some dark dungeon thing. So she really got pissed at him at the very end. Yeah, she did not mince words. She didn't just become super soft and, it's okay, honey, I understand you were such an idiot. No.
So she retreated and grieved and then came out and got justice.
Totally.
Nice.
I like that. I was like, yes! You know, because I was going, well, that's really great about getting the son back and getting everybody all happy, but what about the brother? I mean, you know, he didn't do something really nice.
Right, right. Well, and in some versions, right, because I said it was the storm god,
mm-hmm.
but in other versions it's the moon god.
Yeah.
And Tsukiyomi is the name. Susanawa, Tsukiyomi, moon god, storm god. And I'm sure that there is someone out there who's like, you said that backwards. But this is, you know... There are many versions, and they're all twisted around. So,
right. And, of course, out of the creation of both the brother separately and the sister, Amaterasu, they wind up with the eight gods, because eight is a very sacred number in the Shinto religion. And, of course, there were three guys and five girls.
Nice.
See, so it kind of came out as a different version to make eight.
Right.
So I was like, yeah. We sat more at the table. So, but it was, you know, and again, we know that the Japanese flag has the rising sun.
Right.
And that is her symbol.
Yep.
So we do have that. And I know that we look at, it's also talked about as the mirror. So she's kept straight through as a symbol, straight through to the present day.
Yeah.
But I will have to say that after 1945, the emperor, because part of the dynamics is that she, through her Amaterasu's son, came to Earth. There was a whole perspective of his coming to Earth and, you know, dealing with the people. The dynasties of the emperors and empresses would hail back to her.
Right, much like in Egypt.
Yes.
Pharaoh is descended from the gods.
Yes.
In Japan, the emperor was descended from Amaterasu.
Amaterasu. And in 1945, the emperor disclaimed that.
Right.
and then also outlawed polytheism.
Right.
And, of course, we can pretty well figure that that was the dropping of the bomb and the ending of World War II.
Yeah, which is fascinating. And the other thing I found, because I've been reading a little bit on Shinto, it's not a tradition that I knew very much about before, but 80% of people in Japan are Shinto, but they don't call themselves Shintoists, right? So they're doing the rituals and they're doing the things that are considered Shinto, connected to the Shinto system, but they don't actually say, oh, I'm a Shintoist.
Right.
Because that's, you know, they don't do the polytheist thing, but they still go to the shrine. It's very interesting. It's very interesting.
And after our break, which will be, I guess, right now, are we on break at this moment?
Well, I think we can be.
Since I am, at this point, unable to get into chat.
Alan, can we be on break?
Okay. So we will go with break and come back. Or not. As the case may be, we will continue to talk then. Dead air on radio is terrible.
Whoops.
All right, so I guess what we will do now is just keep talking until we are broken into by our break. It sort of fits the week, though.
Yeah,
no,
I like it.
We didn't go there. So, okay, so we've gotten through to symbols. Let's go with symbols.
Sure.
Her symbols are obviously the mirror.
Mirror.
Mm-hmm. And the jeweled necklace.
Yes.
And the sword.
Yes.
And they all represent parts of her power as both the feminine, the mirror being the reflection, the feminine aspect, the sword being the masculine and justice, and the necklace is for the beauty that she carries.
Right.
And
these are considered the three imperial regalia of Japan.
Exactly.
So they are sacred objects in the country of Japan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I guess at this point, I would probably say we have the regalia, we have her symbols, and actually these are kept officially at her temple, and that temple, on Issei.
Issei Shrine in Issei City.
And it is
Zu, Japan.
And she basically, that's what they're the originals, and they were given to... they were given as a, you know, this was like kept and sacred, and every, 20 years,
right,
they destroy the temple because it's made of wood. It is not made of concrete.
Right.
And they destroy it, and then they rebuild it.
Right. And new offerings are given to her only every 20
years. Every 20 years.
Yeah. So
I wonder.
It makes me think, well, maybe there was a period of 20 years where this, where it was darker, maybe a volcano erupted.
Right.
The hell knows, but there was probably something for the ancestors.
Right.
That had went through this period where it was very dark and people were ill and da-da-da-da-da, and so now every 20 years. I mean, who knows? I'm just making this up. But it makes, I mean...
Well, they live in the volcanoes there.
Right,
which,
absolutely.
You know, you figure we pretty well have a situation where things would be going off and people would be looking at the circumstances,
right,
of, you know, it's dark because there's ash all over, but they wouldn't have known that.
Right, exactly.
So
and they have record of this tradition, so going back to the year 690, but that's just because that's when it was made a record of. It doesn't mean it wasn't existing older than that.
Right, right.
In shape or form.
Because we don't know.
Right.
That's kind of a situation. But, and you know, one of the other cultures that actually still, that does have, but again, it's a it's one that has had a lot of, you know, breakups in it, is the Native American.
Mm.
They also have a sun goddess.
Right.
So, I mean, interesting is that, and of course there is this, the philosophy that the Native Americans came over the Bering Bridge or whatever it is that they did, but thinking of it,
sure,
there's a connection.
Sure.
To the Indonesian point of reference.
And there are folks who are in the Shinto system who only work with Amaterasu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that again, that can point to 1945 when they said, okay, you can't be polytheist anymore.
Right.
You know, potentially. But the folks, it's excluding other kami.
Right.
It's about kami being the divinity, the sacred essence you only work with the kami of the sun,
mm-hmm.
and those people are considered to be worshippers of the cult of the sun.
Sun,
yeah.
Right. So,
yeah.
But we do have, you know, the warmth and the light of the goddess, and then she nurtures. And I think that actually, to me, feels more feminine.
Yeah.
Than, you know, I mean, I understand the moon, but it was always about the reflective process. But, you know, they talk about Amaterasu warming and you know, yes, it can get hot and brutal, but the idea of warmth and nurturing
right.
and the process of that would
right.
make more sense to me to be a solar goddess.
Yeah, well, and we're talking about Japan, so it's not necessarily known for being this arid, humid, hot.
Right.
I mean, it gets that way, but that's it's not the desert.
Right.
You know, it's an island. It's a
yeah.
giant island.
Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, we talked about the mirror, the sword, the jewels, but she's also connected to weaving.
Right.
The loom.
Right.
The artistry of that, which I find very interesting to have
huh.
a sun deity.
With weaving.
With weaving.
You figure the smithcraft process,
sure.
jewelry making and smithing, and
sure.
that makes...
Or the harvest goddess or
right.
something. You know,
right.
Yeah, so that's
weaving is... And she was the one that, I guess, what was she introduced the cultivation of rice
yes.
and wheat
yes.
and the silkworm.
Right, that's right, the silkworm.
Which, of course,
makes
is
sense for the
weaving.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is fascinating because some of these things, when you look at other cultures and other traditions, they're not the ones that sit with the solar. I mean, the solar gods are all about, the solar deities are all about, like, war and masculine
right,
stomp
right.
and shop and
right.
whatever kind of thing. And I'm thinking, but look at all of it. You know, it's the other side of the
yeah,
sun.
Yeah. Right. It looks
so,
like it's time for a break now.
Okay. We're now doing a break. Ta-da!
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candela's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxu with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursday 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Friday 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
And we're back again.
Hooray.
Yay. So, since we left with Shinto, we'll begin with Shinto.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Shinto.
Shinto, go for it.
Shinto. So, like I mentioned, Shinto is still the main system of worship in Japan. And there was a line with Buddhism. When Buddhism really came into Japan, things really changed for Shintoism.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a group of folks who are... reconstructing Shinto and trying to go back
mm-hmm.
to what the system of worship was like before Buddhism became such a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that those folks are called the Koshinto Shintoists,
hmm.
right?
Okay.
It's literally that translates as old Shinto. We're going back to the old
way, Shinto,
right?
The old way.
Right, right. There is sect Shinto. This was created in the 1890s. And it was to separate government shrines
uh-huh.
from religious communities, local small religious communities.
Uh-huh.
So that's very interesting to me. It's a legal thing to say, okay, this is government Shinto, and this is not.
Uh-huh.
So, you know,
uh-huh.
there you go.
Uh-huh.
Folk Shinto, I think that's pretty obvious, just like any other folk tradition.
Right.
Those are the people who are working with local tutelary spirits, connecting with the deities. There's a lot of practice with divination and possession.
Hmm.
Also what we would call shamanic, which
right.
is not a term in Japan, but
right.
we've
sort of introduced that as a generic
yeah.
way to describe things.
Yeah. And they actually, folk Shinto practitioners use some things from Confucianism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, gosh, my tongue. from Taoism and from Buddhism. So it's kind of a mishmash of all of these different systems. And I'm trying to be cautious with the word religion because Buddhism is not a religion.
Right.
Taoism is not a religion. And really, Shintoism isn't really either. These are systems of practice. It's connected to ancestor worship. But it's not what we think of in the West as religion. So
right.
it's a slippery slope because it is, but it isn't. So I just want to point that out.
Kind of give that up.
But then mainly most Shinto falls into the category of what we would call shrine Shinto. And that's going to shrines, literally going to the shrines and leaving offerings and doing worship and going into the temple and doing the things. And what's interesting is over time, Buddhist temples and Shinto temples have sort of connected.
Yeah.
So folks who may have once gone to temple to do their Shinto practices are now going and doing Buddhist practices.
Right.
Right, which we see all over the world. We'll just build our church on top of this shrine.
And there you go.
Yeah. And then there are, because as we mentioned, as Elvira pointed out, the emperor was, until 1945 anyway, was descended from Amaterasu, descended from the gods. So there are specific religious rites. Imperial Shinto that only the religious family is allowed to practice.
Right.
And there are three shrines that only the imperial family is allowed to go to, and specific grounds that they are the only folks who go to. And there are specific ancestral spirits and specific kami, gods, you know, big forces, sacred essences that only work with the imperial family. However, I don't know if that's changed, right? I mean, since 1945, that might not be the case anymore.
It's interesting, and I'm listening to you talk about this, and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you know what this sounds like, especially with all the different informations that you've just given out, pieces of information? It sounds like witchcraft and its history,
right.
And, you know, what has happened from paganism and witchcraft and then Wicca and, you know, the things that are going around and moving into place in the 1900s and, you know, and yet this is happening with this particular traditional beliefs and spiritual beliefs.
Right.
And they're moving into that. So being something where it was only for the dynastic point of reference may not hold anymore since he abdicated the connection.
Right.
He dissolved it, divorced it, however we want to call it. So I don't know quite how that would work.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't know. Yeah. Don't know. One of those questions for us to
ponder later.
Yeah. There are 81,000 shrines, Shinto shrines, in the country of Japan, 81,000. And there are 85,000 priests in the country.
Holy moly.
Right?
Really?
It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. You think that, well, think about it, okay? How many churches in the United States?
Sure.
You know,
at least one on every corner.
On every corner. Truthfully, and I'm not being sarcastic because I can go to places outside of the area I'm in and find that to be the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is, you know, but they tend to, I know that because it's based with nature, it is based with the natural elements.
Right.
It is every
it's
place.
It's important that it fits into the landscape.
Exactly.
It should not look like this huge temple, like what we might see in a church.
Right.
The church should stand out as God's house.
Right.
But the Shinto temple should look like it belongs
as part of the landscape. And I think, again, looking at the principles they have put into effect, I look at that and I go, now, I can see that. I can feel that as the appropriate way to honor the divine and how we want to translate it, rather than keep saying, it is better that it is different and it is bigger and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, even with the Greek temples, come on.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It didn't. It was like, look at me, look at me, look at me, like a kid.
Yeah.
Rather than, we are the we are part.
Yeah. Yeah, what's interesting, and I feel, again, I'm saying this without having cultural background, so I want to be super clear about
mm-hmm,
that, but
mm-hmm.
I think that this Shinto seems pretty open to folks practicing it, because you don't have to be, you don't have to belong to a specific quote-unquote church.
Right.
You don't have to sign up for Shinto membership. You can go to the shrine and beseech the kami and ask for favors and leave offerings and do the thing
right.
and not actually belong to the organization. And that's why 80% of the population is Shinto but
right.
don't consider themselves a Shintoist.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I feel like as a Westerner, it would be pretty open for me to go and connect with these gods and go to the shrines, where in other systems of a lineage tradition like the Afro-Caribbean tradition, it's definitely not okay.
Right.
You need to have some formal introduction and initiation to really do the ritual.
Right.
Where
right.
here it seems like it's a little bit more like, hey, come on.
Yeah, we're all one. Hey.
Yeah.
Well,
breaks.
And one of the things that I found in the way they describe Shinto is it is not seen like with the brother being evil and
yeah.
Amaterasu good. They don't see there's no different disagreement about, there's no conflict between good and evil.
Right.
No conception of evil, rather that Shinto judges actions in terms of whether it is appropriate to its time and place. For instance, if you were to say something mean and awful to a child,
mm-hmm.
and that would be wrong. Whereas if you said a similar thing to an adult that had done something or you were responding in that way, it would have a different context.
Right.
And I when I read that, I went,
yeah,
I'm in that one, because that makes sense, where you don't have, you are good and you are evil. It is a difference of whether it's
yeah.
appropriate.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a total different cultural construct
yeah.
than what we
think of
as far as faith.
Right,
yeah.
And I guess that's probably one of the reasons why being a witch is really, it has its own way of looking at things. But it was interesting being challenged this week with some clients and things that were requested, and it was like, I choose to do things in a certain way because I look at how you can balance something, rather than knowing that everything has a give and take.
Yeah.
And, you know, the connectedness that Shinto feels to everything around it. There is
mm-hmm.
a give and take. What is appropriate?
Right.
You know, not as what I want, but what is appropriate.
Right.
And we tend to, that's being at the grown-ups table.
Right.
Really.
And I struggle with this a lot, because a lot of the folks in the reclaiming tradition and my sort of home tradition are
mm-hmm.
they consider themselves anarchists. And I often struggle with anarchy. I like the idea of it, but I don't know that I trust people enough to do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of ingrained into our culture. We have all these rules and regulations and stop signs and, you know, these
mm-hmm.
basic things, because some sort of governess keeps everyone kind of on the same page.
Right.
Right? Where with anarchy, anything goes, and I don't know that I trust human beings enough to have anything go. But here we have this is an anarchy, right? And
mm-hmm.
clearly, because we're talking about Japan, where it's a much stricter
right.
culture
right.
than what we have in the United States anyways. But that's kind of what's ringing in my ears when
mm-hmm.
you say those things, is like, you do what's appropriate, and you trust that other folks are doing what's appropriate.
Right.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
But again, this is part of what our, you know, this deity
mm-hmm.
brings up these concepts because she is part of this tradition.
Right.
And does this follow? When it was maybe smaller communities,
right,
you could do that.
Yes.
But when you gain in largeness, in the multitude of people being in any one place, you're talking about way too many I's
yeah.
and not enough we's.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know, and I think so anarchy can work in small communities,
yeah.
but anarchy in a large environment, I mean, we already know right now there's one point of reference of tearing down things and tearing down, you know, the government structures and, and you know, ripping apart things. And you're like, wait a minute, you think that that's going to actually be appropriate to large groups of people?
Right.
You know, it's it tends to make me concerned. So, you know, Shinto has a good place, and I think that in our own personal communities it can work.
Yeah.
If we were looking at it as something to put in our own practice.
It's just such a different cultural construct than what we're used to in the Western world.
Yeah.
And I think unless you plan on moving to Japan and immersing yourself in this culture, we can't really understand it. And
that's
an option. I mean, go for it. But
that's true.
We can't really understand it.
Right.
I do want to talk about Uzume, though.
Okay, let's go with
Uzume. Before we run out of time.
Oh, no. Please. We have
to. Uzume is a badass, and I love badass goddesses.
Yes.
So, you know, when we told the story, we got a little bit of a description of Uzume.
Mm-hmm.
Ame no Uzume no Mikito. Right?
Uh-huh.
Say that three times fast.
No,
or Ame no Uzume is also her name sometimes. But she is another Shinto Kami spirit.
Uh-huh.
She is also known as the Great Persuader, the Heavenly Alarming Female, and the one who revels in her sensuality.
Uh-huh.
Pretty great.
Pretty
great. She is connected to spiritual drumming.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've ever seen the
taiko.
Yes,
taiko drumming.
That shit is amazing.
Do you know that my brother, my younger brother by 2 years, is doing taiko drumming?
Really?
Yes.
He's
a chiropractor,
awesome.
But he's doing taiko drumming, so I understand that.
It is so awesome. And I like drumming. I'm a drummer.
Uh-huh.
I like Middle Eastern drumming. I like African drumming. But there is something about the pounding of the taiko drum that is, it like sinks into your bones.
Yes.
It's so freaking cool. Look it up if you've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a spiritual practice in Japan around the drumming. And the way Uzume lures Amaterasu out of the cave is doing this dance that's body and sexual and all of these things, but it's a sacred dance.
Right.
So Uzume is connected to the sacred drumming, the ritual drumming, and the ritual dance, the sacred dance.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing you find all over the world, sacred dance and sacred drumming.
Yep.
And I love it.
Mm-hmm. And that is a definite. She is... Also, now, again, I'm going to probably slaughter the name, but I apologize. In the Demeter Persephone myth, at one point, of course, Demeter is sitting on a rock and crying and moaning and having a, you know, she's really unhappy that, you know, Persephone is gone and it's so the world is in darkness and nothing is going. And there is a similar goddess who comes and does the same thing. And her name is, I know it's B-A-U-B-O, so
right.
Babu is how I would say it, but I may be wrong, obviously.
It has to be Baobo.
Baobo?
I don't know.
But she comes and does the same thing.
Right.
She dances and she does, you know, the sexual thing and lifts her skirt up and giggles and suddenly Demeter starts to laugh and get out of her grief. And, you know, she didn't quite do the same thing where suddenly, you know, she says summer comes and everything is wonderful. But it pulled her out of her grieving process.
Mm.
So it is a similar theme, and that is one of the more, we've already talked about Demeter and Persephone. So it is something that is part of that myth as well for the purposes of, again, pulling the goddess from her absorbed in self-grieving to come back to the world.
And what's interesting is the Baobo, however you pronounce it, they've found these Greek figurines all over the place, and often she's exposing her vulva.
Yes.
Which is what Uzume does. She exposes her vulva. It's a very interesting crossover, right? And I don't know that I know of this type of story from any other culture. I'm sure there is.
Well, there's Sheila Nagak.
Right. But she's the doorway, right?
She's the doorway.
Not necessarily the one who's
showing
you her bits to entice you.
To entice you and make you laugh.
Right.
I don't know if you want to laugh.
Interesting. There's, so, you know, again, if there's something about sacred dance or sacred drumming mm-hmm. that appeals to. Here are two goddesses to start talking to.
Definitely.
She, Uzume, is also connected to joy and happiness. She's a very joyful goddess. She's,
right.
Connected to laughter and good health. She's, her name literally translates as whirling,
mm-hmm.
connected, right? So
mm-hmm.
think of like the
whirling dervishes.
Right?
Hey.
Yeah, those dancers. She's heaven's forthright female.
Mm.
Right? So there's just all of these things about her that are so cool. And if you drink from the blessed water of her stream, it gives you good health. And this is me saying this. This is not from a sacred text or anything. I just imagine her sacred source, her sacred water, it's probably some body of water in Japan
right.
connected to. I just imagine that it flows from her vulva. Right.
Right.
I mean,
right.
that just makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Of
yeah.
the way she dances and,
yes,
you know.
Truly, truly.
She's also connected to marriage, which I find really lovely because she's joy and happiness
right.
and sensuality and
marriage,
right? It's cute.
Yeah.
Like
well,
it.
And that makes the concept of marriage, joy, and happiness,
right.
which is the point of, you know, to have it as a joyous event as opposed to anything that has made it a chore or
yeah.
all the cultural structures and, as we were talking about, rules and regs.
Yeah.
So
and her dances, they still do her sacred dances.
Mm-hmm.
There are folk rites all over Japan
mm-hmm.
dedicated to Uzume.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important ones is the dance to wake the dead.
Ooh.
She does
yeah.
a dance to wake the dead, and she does a dance to plant the seeds.
Oh, wow.
Right? So life and death.
Wow.
Heaven.
Well, one of the other things that we might want to add quickly
yes.
is the different festivals or feasts
sure.
that are done.
We're having a breakthrough.
Never mind. That was a sidebar of music. The feast, her feast day, Amaterasu's feast day is July 17th. She is also, because of the solstice,
right.
she is December 21st.
Yeah. And July 17th is like a month too late
the summer solstice. So, there, you know, if you look at the solstices and the equinoxes, she is probably one of the main energy patterns for all four of those events.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, it is the festival of the sun.
Right.
And that is the one thing for July 17th. And, of course, calling the sun back
mm-hmm.
December 21st.
Right.
And there are others that have been thrown in there for different parts of, you know, closing the door. February 3rd is considered closing the door to winter. And, you know, some of the others that we've not mentioned, but we'll just let you kind of peruse when you find information on.
There is a lovely ritual in the goddess oracle that I mentioned earlier where you can connect to Amaterasu. So you create sacred space for yourself with a mirror, and then you call Amaterasu in,
mm-hmm.
and you look at yourself in the mirror, and ideally you get completely naked, and then you bless each part of your body. You look at yourself, and you say, my eyes are beautiful, and you anoint yourself with oil. My lips are beautiful. My neck is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
My armpits are beautiful. You go through your body parts, and
mm-hmm.
you look at them in the mirror. You see the beauty in them.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt shit's going to come up, and you're going to go, oh, I don't like that, or, oh, there's a lint there. Oh, my stretch marks. That's what I always do.
Mm-hmm.
Let that go, and bless it, and see
mm-hmm.
the beauty in it, and
mm-hmm.
see the beauty in it, and allow Amaterasu to bless that beauty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And we have just 1 minute.
1 minute to tell you that next week is the element of Earth.
Right. Which you may have seen about this week, but it was a lie.
It was a lie. We misrepresented it. So I'm so glad we could come back and talk about Pantheon and then discuss Amaterasu, and
yeah.
we'll get grounded next week.
Yes, eventually we'll be grounded.
Have a wonderful week.
Yes, thanks for listening. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.